Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today I've got quite a wild story for you from South Africa. You're going to meet a very different white Christian. This guy might just be in a league of his own. And the story that you're going to hear unfolding is a story that went very wrong. And there are Boers who really don't want to discuss this at all. People just disappeared into hiding, and everybody wanted to distance themselves from this thing like you cannot believe. This is a very bizarre event, but this is a story worth telling. Like all stories, no matter what the things are that are inside the story, you can always learn from everything. This is a thing that went really wrong. So let me give you some background to this. The guy that you see on the screen in front of you, his name is Harry Knussen. And the first time I heard the name Harry Knussen was a couple of years ago. I was talking to people on the phones and somebody came out and said to me, they said to me, there is this group of Christians known as the Crusaders. And if you look on the top right image there, you'll see there is the emblem of the Crusaders. So this person, this man I think, said to me that there's a group here in South Africa called the Crusaders. And it is led by a guy called Harry Knussen. And he said to me that in this group called the Crusaders are lots of Rakis. Now, what is a Raki? A Raki, spelt R-E-C-C-E, that is an abbreviation for Reconnaissance Commando. These are South Africa's special forces. In the time of apartheid, these were the best of the best. The Rakis were the best special forces that the whites had. So this guy said to me, there's this Christian guy, Harry Knussen, and he's got lots of Rakis and other soldiers who are following him. And these guys are Christians. And he said to me, the guy who's gonna change everything is Harry Knussen. He said to me, all these other groups are of no consequence. He said, all these other groups, these are just a bunch of amateurs. They aren't gonna do anything like these Crusaders. These Crusaders are gonna save whites. These people mean business. And they've got the talent and the ability, and they're Christians, they work according to God, and they are going to do real stuff. So that sounded pretty hectic, that. And later on, I heard people saying, yeah, the Crusaders are busy on Facebook. And the best that I could pick up was that there were about 700 of them. So anyway, this guy who told me about these people, he poo-pooed everybody. Like, all of you people are wasting your time. The man who's going to make it happen is Harry Knussen, and he's got people that are going to make things happen. Then, later, I went to America in 2019. And when I came back from America, I was working on my stuff, on my websites and sorting out my things. And then late in 2019, I was on other groups. And then I began to see that talk about Harry Knussen was coming up a lot. And this was starting to get hectic. And Harry Knussen was starting to produce videos and sharing them on phones. And I watched one or two of these videos, And I was taken aback. This guy was talking some serious stuff. And there was a hell of a controversy going on. Other leaders, other Boer leaders, didn't like what Harry Knussen was saying. And as I was looking at these messages and the intensity of what he's saying, I actually made the effort to contact him. And I said to Harry, I've got a website and I do videos. Why doesn't he come and I will interview him and he can discuss what it is that he wants to do, etc., etc. But Harry wasn't interested. And there was a hell of a lot of commotion going on the phones, with people talking and leaders saying things and so forth, and people criticizing Harry for what he was saying. Because Harry was basically saying that he's going to declare war on the blacks and that it is time for whites to fight. So let me tell you a little bit about Harry Knussen. My understanding is that Harry Knussen was in the army in the time of white rule, and that he rose to the rank of warrant officer, or as the British or other armies might refer to it, as a sergeant major. A sergeant major or a warrant officer is the highest non-commissioned rank that you can get in the military. A commissioned rank like lieutenant, captain, major, colonel, general, that is a separate line of ranks. Normally, in many armies, to become a commissioned officer, you also need a university degree. But if you're just a normal guy who comes in and you're just a private and maybe you get promoted to corporal and sergeant, then you go up a line that takes you to sergeant major or warrant officer. And that is what Harry Knussen was. So he was a guy who had a long experience in the military, but he had come from the lower ranks and he's not a commissioned officer. So he did have a valid military background, and other military guys did look up to him. But it turns out that Harry is quite a passionate guy, and that Harry actually is deeply, exceptionally, incredibly Christian. This guy is driven genuinely by an incredible belief in the message of the Bible. Totally. So let's just take a look at these images on the screen here. If you look at the top right where it says Crusaders, that is their logo. And what you see there on the far right is a Christian cross, and there are two swords that are crossed. And that five-pointed symbol that you see there, that is actually a symbol used by the South African military, and it actually pertains to the very first fort that was ever built in South Africa by the Dutch. So that is a standard military symbol. In the time of apartheid, that symbol of that fort was everywhere. So you can see that the name for their organization was Crusaders. That is their logo, and it says, National Christian Resistance Movement, Yield to None. And then below it is another logo which says NCRM, which is National Christian Resistance Movement. And then if you look below that, it's got wings, possibly like angels' wings or something. Then you see a Christian cross, and you see two crossed swords. So I'm not quite sure why they've got two particular logos. It's almost like it's one organization, but it's got two logos. And this is the Crusaders. So obviously based on the term that the Christians used hundreds of years ago when they invaded the Middle East. Now, if you look on his uniform here, this is his uniform clearly from his crusaders, because that's not a normal military uniform. And you'll see that he's got like epaulettes there, which have got stars. Normally those things indicate a rank like a general. And then further down, he's got an identification tag on him, and it's in green and white and yellow, and it says First Knight. He actually calls himself First Knight General. Knight as in a knight on a horse. So First Knight General Knussen, Crusaders. But I can't read the other writing. So he doesn't just call himself a general, he calls himself a First Knight General. This will give you a bit of an idea about what this guy was like and what his organization sort of represented. And clearly a big aspect of his organization, because there are so many Christian whites in South Africa, especially amongst the Boers, this obviously was a big draw card. So he's not an evil man. He stands for God and the Bible, and he's a serious Christian. So he's not just some guy who's a crook, etc. And as Harry was heating up his propaganda and his stuff before he started unleashing, let's call it, his Christian army, I do recall a voice note or a video where Harry Knussen started attacking all the other organizations, all the other self-defense white organizations. And he was saying to people, "You are paying monthly fees to those organizations." And he said, "You're wasting your money." And he basically indicated that you mustn't pay fees and waste your money for these organizations that are going to do nothing. You know, join me, because I'm going to attack. I will be honest with you, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Which is why I went to him and I managed to make contact with him, and I said to him, "Come and join me and we'll do a show and you can talk about the issues and explain things and I'll interview you." But he had no further interest. Out of the hundreds of people in the Crusaders, to my knowledge, only four were ever arrested and went into court. So the one was Harry himself, and then these two people. The woman on the left is Rihanna Haymans. She was actually his second in charge. And then these two guys are the Abrahamson brothers. Later on in this video, when I'm busy talking to my lawyer, you'll see that I ask him whether these Abrahams brothers are white, because I thought that by the name that they might be coloureds, but as you can see, they are whites and they are from the Cape. They are from the Eastern Cape. So these three people were arrested, and these two brothers got 8 years jail time, and Rihanna turned state witness. And this photo that you see here, this is from in the court. This is from in the court in Middelburg. And that is Harry on the left. And then next to him, Rihanna. And then the two Abrahamson brothers. Now let me show you a little bit of film footage of Harry Knussen. And this will give you an idea of what he was like as a person. The first thing I want to show you is the only video that I've got where he's speaking and above all, where he's speaking in English. All his videos were used in the court case, and he made many videos. The majority of them were in Afrikaans, and they all disappeared. When these people were being hunted down, everything that related to them disappeared. And unless somebody out there still has got copies somewhere, the vast majority of everything that these people did disappeared. It all disappeared. But there was a lot of stuff. But this 2-minute video is where Harry speaks. And listen to what he says in English. And he says that we white people must stand together as a nation. Listen to what he says.
It's important for us to stand together as a white nation. I know there are many movements, and there are many movements. I've met with some of the leaders around the table, and we've sat and spoke, and halfway into speaking, a minute into speaking, I stop them and I say, you know what, we're not on the same page. Reason why we aren't on the same page, they want to defend, they want to wait and see what happens. Reality is, you cannot wait to see what the enemy is going to do. You cannot wait for the enemy to wake up, because if you wait for him to wake up, it's too late already. The National Christian Resistance Movement, the Crusaders, haven't got a waiting plan. We've got an attack plan. That's the only way to win this situation. The only way to turn the tables is by attacking. I'm talking war. Yes, I'm talking war. Because if Malema can say what he wants and the rest can say what they want because they're black, then me as a white man and a white general of my movement, I will say what's in my heart. I'm not saying what I want. I'm saying what's in my heart. And I'm asking you today, if you are in a movement that's waiting to see what happens, get the hell out of that movement and join the Crusaders. We need at least 4,000 more people. We are large, but we're not large enough. We don't want to make fools of yourselves. We're not going to make fools of yourselves. But if you want to save this country for your children and your grandchildren, stand with the Crusaders. We aren't in this waiting rut. We are hotful and we are fired up to stand up. In this country, as a white man, you mean nothing. Your children is going to be mean less, and your grandchildren, they aren't going to exist for very long. Because these people are speaking about wiping us out. I have to tell you this just quickly. I've never been in my life a racist. This new South Africa has made me a racist. I am a racist. I'm also a man of God. I love God with all my heart and all my soul and with all my being. But I hate this ugly stuff that's happening to us. I hate.
So, how did that video surprise you? Harry turns out to be quite a reasonable guy, and he speaks well, and he says that if a black man can stand up and say he wants to kill all the whites, why can't a white man stand up for the whites? Why can't a white leader also say what's on his mind and what's in his heart? And that thing that Harry says he's not a racist, that is interesting, because I remember when I was digging into the Harry Knudsen stuff in the early days after this happened, I came across mention that Harry Knudsen had some kind of contact with some kind of black politician in the parliament, and it was a black Christian. But all of that stuff now seems to have disappeared and nobody knows about it. But there is nothing that Harry has said in that video that is unreasonable. Nothing that's unreasonable. He says he wasn't a racist, but the quotes, New South Africa, made him racist. And he says that a white man counts for nothing. And that is totally true. In fact, the white male is the most targeted person in this country. But white males everywhere are targeted. But Harry is saying reasonable things. And when he's talking about the movements, he's talking about all these defensive organizations like the Seidlanders, the Boer Legion, and all these others. So it's quite interesting that Harry turns around and says, they are all waiting for something to happen, and by the time that something happens, it's too late. That's why he's got an attack plan. He's not going to wait for the enemy to attack us. He's going to attack the enemy first. So you've never heard a white man, especially a white Christian, saying, I've got an attack plan. And he openly says, I mean war. But again, if you had to look at the things that Harry Knudsen said, and you had to compare it with what Julius Malema said and lots of other blacks, don't think Julius Malema is the only black that has said that the whites should be killed. We had a previous president, Zuma. Zuma used to sing a song called Mshini Wami, which basically amounted to bring me my machine gun. And the blacks even had all kinds of visual cues that indicated that they're talking about shooting us. And there is film footage of Zuma singing this in front of crowds. So it's not just Malema. Malema is just the latest one. But Zuma did this, and there are others. There are other blacks who've spoken. There's another black from Black First, Land First. They were talking about killing everything, killing the white babies, and even killing the dogs and cats that belong to the whites, where they say kill everything. And then I did a video where I had that black guy from the EFF who said that 50 million blacks could kill 4 million whites in 2 weeks. This is not a thing that just one black has done. And it's not just a thing that one black has done quietly in a corner. Blacks have been on national radio, national television, and as you've seen with Malema, standing in a whole stadium and telling the blacks that it's time to destroy the whites, kill the whites. So if you had to compare what Harry Knudsen said and did, he's just the only white man who was engaging in something like what these blacks are doing, but much more milder. Much milder. He has reason to say what he says. And that notion that he says that he wasn't a racist before, but that he became a racist, that is very, very possible. And I'm going to show you shortly how absolutely serious Harry was about his Christianity. Then you'll see that this man is driven by a real passion. And when he says he believes in the Bible, he really believes in the Bible, okay? He really believes in his interpretation of the Bible and the Word of God. As for other blacks like Malema, they've even tried to start racial conflicts in South Africa. I've been around and I've had a look at things. I need to show whites some of the things that I've seen that I never put into videos. I have watched Malema over a long period of time. I will tell you that in my view, Julius Malema has tried to start an actual race war in South Africa on multiple occasions from 2010 onwards. And it includes things like setting farms on fire, setting people's houses on fire, blacks engaging in mass violence. I've got the photos and I can show you where it happened. These blacks want a race war. Malema has been trying to start an actual race war, and probably whites have been killed and white property has been massively damaged. But you'll see that Julius Malema never spent one day in jail. But here is old Harry Knussen, and he's had enough. And he used that word gatvol. Gatvol is a South African word that means we've had it. We are sick to death of the situation. Gatvol is almost like saying, I've had it up to here, but it is in a harder way. It's like, I'm sick to death of this thing. Now let me show you some film footage of Harry Knussen, the Christian. And you're not going to believe what you're going to see. Harry Knussen was such a devout Christian that at one point he had a cross made. And it's actually a cross that's made out of steel. And he went and he walked a long distance with this cross. I'm not sure if he maybe even walked across South Africa with that cross. And this guy is serious, okay? This guy is dead serious. So here is a little piece of film footage where you'll see Harry Knussen walking with his steel cross, Jesus style. Check this out. So, how was that, hey? There you can see Harry walking out literally in the middle of nowhere, like maybe the Free State or somewhere in the Cape, and it's out in a rural area. He walked long distances with that cross. I almost think that he may have walked across South Africa with that cross. He might just have walked at the very minimum hundreds of kilometers with his cross, maybe even 1,000 or 2,000 kilometers with his cross. That's no joke there, hey? And you saw him with his army boots on. So you can say what you want about Harry, but he's tough. He's tough and he is what he says he is. You cannot call Harry a hypocrite. He's a man who does what he says he's going to do. Now that business of his reasoning for why he's got an attack plan, that is something that needs to be taken apart and assessed properly. But it gives you an idea of his thinking. He's thinking in a military way, but the question is, how accurate is his military thinking? What follows is a short 2-minute TV news video. It's in Afrikaans, and I'm not going to bother to translate it. What is more important are the visuals. And in there, you'll see the visuals of the four of these people in court. And you'll also see them going down a staircase. What is happening there is they're going down into the cells that are below the court. That's what that is about. They're walking downstairs to the holding cells in the court. And you'll also see some film footage, again, of Harry with his cross and all that kind of thing. But you'll get to see them live in the court, the four of them. And I'm not sure if anybody ever came to court to be with them. It could be possible that they were alone or almost alone.
Harry Johannes Knussen is die selfverklaarde leier van die nasionale Christen weerstandsbeweging. Die owerhede ondersoek dit al 2 jaar. Knussen is op donderdag in Mpumalanga in hegtenis geneem.
Sy medebeskuldigdes, Rihanna Heymans, Eric Abrahams en Errol Abrahams, is kort daarna in Gauteng vasgetrek. Die owerhede het glo ook afgekom op wat lyk soos 'n plofstoffabriek, ongelisensieerde vuurwapens en ammunisie, dokumente en elektroniese toestelle. Volgens 'n verslaggewer van 'n plaaslike koerant is Knussen 'n selferkende rasis.
Tydens ons laaste onderhoud in Maart van hierdie jaar, nadat hy 'n video op Facebook gelaai het waarin hy gesê het dis tyd vir die blanke volk om die land terug te vat, het hy aan my gesê dat hy glo dat hy 'n godverkose leier is.
Karen Mitchell, die skrywer van 'n boek oor die boeremag, sê daar is raakpunte tussen die sake.
Toe ek met die ondersoekbeampte van die boeremagsaak gepraat het, 'n jaar of wat gelede, het hy vir my gesê, daar is so baie regse groepe op Facebook, hulle is op enige plek, jy kan hulle enige plek opspoor, maar dit is totdat daai alarmliggies begin afgaan, en dit is duidelik, iemand het 10-10 vir hulle gesê, luister, hier is iets beplan vir Black Friday, en toe het hulle geen ander keuse as om te spring nie.
Ernbyts, Enies, Middelburg.
The next thing that will give you an insight into some of what happened and the major issues is the testimony of this Rihanna Heymans in court. So what follows is a 7-minute audio. It's a 7-minute audio of an article. And this will give you an idea of what she testified to in court. Among the points that she makes is she says that when they were going to do their attack, which was on a fixed date in November, she mentions that Harry said that there were people from the coloured corps that were joining this assault. Now, the coloureds are mixed race, mulattoes. And coloured corps is, I think, a type of military unit in South Africa. There's a unit for coloureds. And that does not sound at all like whites. These are mixed race people. So who are these coloureds that are joining this thing? And again, this brings me back to my issue that Harry has got contact with non-whites, and I suspect it's Christians. The coloureds, anyway, have their issues with the blacks. So it's possible that coloureds would have come on board to be on the side of the whites. That is quite possible. And you can see these people were serious. They had been doing some work on pipe bombs. Those Abraham's brothers seem to be the people doing that. Here's the audio.
Rihanna Heymans, a former member of the National Christian Resistance Movement, NCRM, took the stand in the Mpumalanga High Court this week in a case involving Harry Noesen, a right-wing pastor and former member of the South African Defence Force. Noesen, who gave himself the title of General, is a self-professed leader of the NCRM, also known as the Crusaders. Noesen allegedly planned an insurrection and the genocide of black people during December 2018 and November 2019. Part of this plot included attacks on national key points. Noesen also allegedly explored the possibility of using a biological weapon to infect and kill members of the African population. The plan was supposed to be executed at midnight on November 28, 2019. But Noesen was arrested that day at his home in Middelburg. 2 years later, his trial began in the Mpumalanga High Court. Noesen has pleaded not guilty to charges of high treason, incitement to carry out terrorist attacks in South Africa, soliciting support and slash or recruiting to carry out terrorist attacks, unlawful possession of a firearm and unlawful possession of ammunition. Rihanna Hymans was arrested on November 29, 2019, but the charges against her were withdrawn in August 2020. She was an administrator of the Crusaders WhatsApp group and had inside information about the plot and where the group held its meetings. She also knew the plan was supposed to be carried out at midnight on November 28, 2019. Hymans' 21-page affidavit detailed how she joined extremist groups, the plot, and her state of mind when she heard the news that the general had been arrested and that the hawks were on her trail. She recalled there being pipe bombs that were to be used during the insurrection, and outlined the role of the Abrams brothers, Errol and Eric, in the plot. The brothers were each sentenced to 8 years in jail in the Middelburg Regional Court in December 2020 for their part in the plot. I remember Errol saying that the person who sold him pipes looked at him suspiciously. On the way home, Errol told me that it was pipe bombs that he loaded in the back of the vehicle. On Friday, November 29, 2019, the brothers said that we were going for a drive. As we left, Eric told me that I am going for my first lesson in how a bomb explodes, she said. The court heard it was Hyman's loneliness that led to her involvement in extremist groups. First, her daughter got married and moved out, then her son left for Dubai, and that is when the loneliness began. I was bitterly lonely and turned to Facebook to communicate with people. Every day my Facebook friend group grew drastically, she said. One day she received a call from a Facebook friend, Joe Boya, who asked if she could become an admin on his WhatsApp group, Ex-United Vires, EUV. She agreed and started helping him around November/December 2018. She said it took her a while to fully understand what the EUV group did, but eventually discovered that they were a right-wing minority group with members in almost every town. It was her task to add new members to the group. Around February/March 2019, Boya moved Hymans to the militant side, and she started adding General Noesan's soldiers to the group. This is also when the Crusaders joined forces with the EUV. Hymans said things were running smoothly until her birthday on July 7, 2019. Joe Boya, she said, made a video and put it on all the groups that he is severing all ties with Harry Noesan and immediately deleted Noesan from the EUV groups. This, according to Hymans, was viewed by Noesan as a hijacking of his soldiers. The court further heard that Noesan asked Hymans to help him get all his lost soldiers back on his group. She agreed and circulated a letter compiled by Noesan which read, "As you know, NCRM Crusaders is the only attack force in South Africa with a plan to be executed soon. It is then," Hymans said, "that the Crusaders started their own WhatsApp group, which she agreed to manage." Hymans told the court that Noesan held meetings in Brakpan, Centurion, Roodepoort, Randburg, Nels Pruit, Bethlehem, Ermelo, Port Elizabeth, Harrismith, and Durban. On Sunday morning, November 24, 2019, I received a call from Michael Winterbacher, an old EUV member turned NCRM member, warning me that the Hawks questioned him and are investigating the NCRM Crusaders. I asked him why they would question him as he was never active in the groups. I immediately called General Harry and told him that. I went to the leaders' groups and also alerted them that we are being investigated by the Hawks. Noesan, Hymans told the court, allegedly told her that soldiers from the Colored Corps from the Cape had joined the Crusaders and the attack would take place on November 28, 2019. On that morning, the news of Noesan's arrest spread like wildfire. Hymans tried calling him but there was no reply. Hymans later received a call from a work colleague informing her that the Hawks were there, looking for her and her electronic equipment. Her cell phone and laptop were at her home. I immediately went into shock. I did not think rationally and was shaking. I just grabbed some clothes and left in my vehicle. I didn't know where I was going and thought of the Abrams brothers. The brothers were shocked by the news of Noesan's arrest. While at their house, she returned a missed call from the Hawks. She promised to phone back in 5 minutes, but never did. Hymans then tried to contact other leaders of the Crusaders and went on social media advising people to leave the groups. Shortly after her arrest on November 29, while police were at the Abrams home, her phone rang. She said it was a person called Marius from the Colored Corps. Hymans said she had told the Hawks about a group from Namibia that was supposed to be part of the insurrection. General Harry S. attack plan, as stipulated in my affidavit, was the plan that he discussed in all the meetings mentioned. General Harry was serious about his attack plan and taking over the country by force, she said. The case continues in the Mpumalanga High Court.
What follows on from this is my discussion with my attorney. I've left some chit-chat in where my attorney and I are busy just talking about South African politics in the past. We're actually talking about a English liberal who was famous, an asshole that we'll meet up with in another video. I want to discuss that stupid, worthless English South African fool, Patton. But that'll be a separate discussion. Anyway, so here is my interview with my attorney, and we did this back in May of 2022, the 8th of May 2022. We did this show then, but I never put it out, but we did it then because the court case was busy at the time. However, at the time that I'm doing this video, which is now in August of 2023, the case is over and Harry Knussen got two life sentences. The Abrams brothers will be out in 8 years. Riana Heymans was a state witness, but the person who took the big fall for everything all by himself was Harry Knussen. Two life sentences. He will probably die in jail from old age. So here's my chat with my attorney. He was the guy who wrote the book Die the Beloved Country. Die the Beloved Country. I think it's...
Yeah, okay. Do you talk about the author, the writer?
Yes. Cry the Beloved Country, Alan Paton.
Cry the Beloved Country, yes.
Okay.
And his widow was one of the first hardcore liberals to leave South Africa with the message that this is not what we hoped for.
She oh, really? When did she leave?
Yeah.
When did she leave?
It was the late 90s.
The trial that I really want to talk to you about, Marius, is Harry Knussen. The thing I want to ask you about is Harry Knussen. I've been trying to find out more about Harry Knussen's trial because after he did his stuff, there are also things that I saw where quite a number of people also had a bit of sympathy for him, in that he may have done very stupid, dumb things that wouldn't have worked. But in certain respects, his heart was in the right place. And there were people who felt that, you know, that you have to take that into account. And I myself don't like to ostracize our own people, even if they do really dumb things. You know, life is life, and whatever people do, whether they do clever things or dumb things, you also just have to accept some things and learn what you can from it. And in my case, I looked at what they did. I thought it was idiotic, but I also thought to myself, as with everything in life, it's worth understanding and it's worth learning from. There's always something that you can learn from it. Some of the things he did and what he said and, you know, whatever. But so I'm not, but I noticed that he disappeared and I struggled because his group was called the Crusaders. as I understand.
Yeah.
That they were Christians. And you know what I'd heard, even like maybe a year before, somebody had said to me, well, you know, when it comes to the future war, there's this guy, Harry Knussen. He's got a lot of, he's got this group, the Crusaders. They've got these Rekkies. They've got these special forces on there, and they will listen to him. And so somebody said to me, they are the people there. They're going to do the thing. So I was like, oh, okay. So that's the first time I heard of Harry Knussen's group, like about a year or two before this stuff went down. So I had a tiny bit of understanding of their background, that they're these hardcore Christians, deep believing Christians.
Okay, but let's stop at that point.
You fire away. You go on.
The first thing I think we have to do is to ask, who is Harry Knussen? Who or what is he? He served in the military the best part of his life until about 45, 50. Then he went out and he became a pastor. But you know, he never was a pastor from one of the mainstream churches. He was what we would call a cult. He had a cult following. He built up a cult following, okay, because he was proclaiming that God anointed him to make a difference and bring a message to the, especially the white people in this country, maybe the Boer people, if you want to narrow it even down further. And he started to proclaim that God has given him messages. One of the messages was that he must reclaim what was taken from white people by wiping out the black people. You can immediately hear the the bold statement that would entail.
More or less when did he start telling people that God had spoken to him and that the blacks must be wiped out?
It was about 2016, 2017.
Ah, so it's a good couple of years ago. Okay.
Yeah. And then he made two mistakes, in my view. He made two major mistakes. You can even call it dumb mistakes. He used his Facebook page and Facebook group to get all this propaganda and messages out. And the messages was potentially inciting violence against black people. He had this on Facebook. I mean, Facebook.
Was he basically breaking the law?
He was breaking the law up to the point where he portrayed him and his group as a potential threat to the country's stability, because he made propaganda for a violent coup d'etat, a violent takeover of the government, a reclaiming of the government for white people.
Okay.
And you can imagine, if you do that kind of stupid things on a platform like Facebook, hell, everyone knows you and knows what you are planning, what you are saying. Why do you do it on Facebook? That
yes.
was the one thing that I thought it was really ill-advised. The second thing is that he was very outspoken about guns, weaponry, armory, and violence. and a trained group of ex-military soldiers and recce, this specialized military units.
Special forces.
Special forces. And they are on his side, and they are all being weaponized. They have a lot of ammunition and weapons. As soon as you get a government like the ANC that is not very sure of their position, because they actually make a mess of running this country, that government, that kind of government, is going to react. They are going to respond, because they immediately feel their positions are endangered, and they love the money and the power that they have as a government. So, of course, they're going to investigate you. They're going to watch you all the way, every minute of day and night. And that is what happened then. He made several videos where he said these things, boldly proclaiming, "I fear nothing and no one," urging his followers and other right-wing, far-right movements to join the Crusaders, because he proclaimed the movement, the Crusaders movement, was anointed by God and was established through divine visions.
Yeah.
From him. So he was actually a cult leader of some sort. One of the videos that he made, he said that God created the white man in his image, with intelligence. But then a copycat entity came to Africa, probably he's referring to Lucifer or the devil, with the intent on engineering the opposite. And that copycat entity found ears, but couldn't find a head. So he took a ball of shit, slapped it on the ears, and fitted the shit ball with a locust brain.
Oh, whoa.
You see, this guy is a bit cuckoo.
He really said
like that little
something.
Bird for
I'm amazed that he. Yeah, so, I'm amazed that he wasn't jailed for just saying that. I'm amazed he didn't get hate speech just for that.
Yeah, well, but I'm amazed that he's not. He has not been sent for a psychological evaluation. This guy is not right in his head.
There are some other things that.
He called on his followers to break the law and mow down as many black people as possible, because they were only consumed by numbers. He projected that from the 50 million, they would soar to 150 million in 8 years, raping, murdering, and torturing minorities like the white minority. And that's the reason why they should annihilate the blacks. I also referred to blacks, Africans, as children of monkeys, monkey children.
The blacks would jail him for that, man. I'm amazed he could even say that, because the blacks will get very irritated by that.
Definitely. But it sounds... Okay, this guy is not all there in his head. But I understand his frustrations, because I've experienced that kind of frustration from many groups in South Africa, minority groups, I may add. And there's a reason for that. It's not an overnight thing. Someone just... Do not snap overnight and get crazy. It's a thing that is developing over a period of years. And not this in this case or in South Africa, but all over other parts of the world, there is marginalization of certain groups, and this is what they call a driver. This marginalization of certain groups, usually minority ethnic groups, is the driver for radicalization.
Yes.
There's another example. In certain groups in northern Mozambique, were also following the same pattern. The Mweni tribe was one of the main ethnic groups in the northern Mozambican coast. And they felt marginalized for decades by migration into the area and the lack of economic development and the neighbors' political clout.
Yeah.
They felt marginalized and got angry. It took time for the situation to explode. But the same is happening in South Africa. People go to the voting stations and vote, but they are not listened to.
Yes.
The white minority go like clockwork to the voting stations and they vote, and then it's the end of it. Nobody listens to the minority groups, being it the white or the Boere or the Indians or the colored people, brown people. Nobody listens. They get radicalized. They get marginalized first, and then they get angry, and then they become radicalized. And that is how these kind of things happen. So I'm saying to you today that Harry Knussen is not the first, and you definitely won't be the last time that these kind of things is going to evolve, because the situation is the same and it still stays the same. So it's going to happen again, and then it's going to happen again. As people are feeling marginalized, they are not listening to, they are powerless,
yes.
And then they become radicalized. And then you get these kind of things. So in that regard, although I can state that Harry Knussen is maybe he was ill-advised, he was actually stupid things that he did or said, I can understand where he comes from.
Yes,
he comes from many of these radicalized groups come from. It's frustration, it's anger, it's marginalized, it's being ignored. Then they get radicalized, and it happens. And it's going to happen again. Well, you see the same thing in America. Every now and then you get a crazy person that goes out and shoots down 7, 5, 10, or 20 people. And then the left is crying for a complete ban on guns and knives and forks and everything, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they are treating the symptoms. They should start to treat the causes. Those people are clearly psychologically disturbed, and why is that not being picked up during school tours, primary school, secondary school, high school, college? They should pick up that kind of conduct or that kind of a serious what's the word I'm looking for? Serious unstable minds, because it's not guns that causes the violence. It's unstable minds. Talking about unstable minds, I can immediately refer to Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Pol Pot, Fidel Castro. All unstable minds. I mean, we have a lot of unstable minds in the South African government as well, in the cabinet. It's people with unstable minds that gets into a position of anger or power, and then they do these things. It's going to go on happening, especially under ignored and marginalized minority groups. ethnic minorities. Ethnic minorities should get much more attention and recognition. South Africa as well. South Africa has got the same problem. There are black tribes that are ethnic minorities, and they are also frustrated and angry with the ANC government. They are also suffering together with other ethnic minorities in South Africa. It's a breeding ground for radicalization. So they should, so they meaning the government, should long before started to attend to the these ignored ethnic minority groups and not just tender and playing to the wishes of the overwhelming black majority. Yeah, so I understand where Erik Knudsen is coming from, and he's not the first. I can take you back about two decades.
Yeah, carry on.
To the 90s. You remember when the Boeremacht saak started? Same thing. Same thing.
What do you know about the Boeremacht?
Bunch of radicalized Boer people, powerless.
When did they start?
They started in the 90s, early 90s.
Really?
Middle 90s.
Boeremacht?
Yeah.
Started early 90s?
Yeah. That's when it started. And then it built...
Tell me more.
As more and more as time went on. And they saw that they were totally stripped of all political power. They are being stripped of all financial or economic power or clout. They can't find work because it's all reserved now for black people.
Yeah.
Affirmative action and broad-based black economic empowerment. BEEBEE. Quotas, etc., etc., and they see no future for the Afrikaner or Boer people in South Africa.
Yes.
People that before 1994, for years, had their own country, their own flag. They were independent. They had sovereignty. They had their own police force, their own military army. And now suddenly they have nothing, nothing. And, of course, that would breed discontent, and it would breed anger and frustration, and that would eventually erupt in radicalization. So that's a recipe that will, you can make that recipe repeatedly. That recipe is going to make itself. In a repetitive way, because nothing is being done to prevent people being marginalized and ignored. And in the end, that is what is happening.
Okay.
That's why these strikes and I think there's a strike in South Africa every day, every week of the day, throughout the year.
Oh, wow.
So many strikes all day, throughout the year. Disgruntled people that are striking and demonstrating and picketing and so on. And you can, if you go to that people, it will all end up on the same basis. They are being ignored and they are being marginalized. Their gripes and complaints are ignored and not being attended to. Of course, that builds anger and frustration, and that will evolve into something violent.
You see, South Africa is an empire, and I don't know, the definition of an empire versus a state. A nation state is normally people who are of a similar background, similar culture, similar language, similar religion. That's the nation state. And a nation state may not be big, but a nation state lasts long because it's a entity of people who are related to each other. What has happened in South Africa and happened in Africa and even in America is that you've had a group of whites who either are a majority or, in the case of South Africa, a minority, but you've had a group of whites who are a nation who then gained power over others who are completely different to them. And in that sense, they became an empire. So now you've got lots of other weird cultures that have got no relationship to you, that they don't even speak the same languages among themselves. South Africa in particular is a particular problem that I think is even worse than America, because you've even got blacks who don't speak each other's language, and they've got different tribal backgrounds. And we've got like 11 official languages. That alone should show we got huge problems here. And then you've got coloreds on top of that, who are a newer invention. And then you've got Indians from freaking Asia, who are large chunks of them are Muslims. You've got all these weird freaking, and you've got English, liberals, Jews. You got this whole freaking mishmash of every conceivable flipping, conflicting kind of thing. But what made it successful was when the Boere, or later apartheid, were able to establish political and military police control over this lot. Because the police side of apartheid is very important. And the Boere were able to control everybody. But now you've taken them away. Now the whole dynamic is turned around. I've watched the blacks with their politics, by the way. I especially watched the blacks with great fascination, their politics with other blacks in Africa. In the case of Mugabe was very active. He was a big player, man. He was a huge player at one time in the 80s and 90s. And then the ANC was a big player in the 90s and the early 2000s, in the time of Mbeki. Marius, I've watched how the ANC makes mistakes in dealing with other blacks. And to my utter delight, I have noticed how the blacks can develop new hatreds with other blacks.
It's happening more and more.
It's wonderful. I love it.
Up the last couple of years, especially since about 2020, I picked up I call it the infighting.
Yeah.
The infighting between blacks and black groups are getting
more violent.
More heated, yeah.
Excellent. More heated.
And there are a lot of blacks, and that was my wish, that it should have happened even before 2000. But now, 30 years, nearly 30 years later, there are a lot of blacks, more and more, that I can see that are openly criticizing the ANC government and openly states that, look, obviously black people cannot run and govern a country. Because if you look at our neighboring states, and if you look especially at South Africa, where South Africa was before 1994 and where it is today, it's clear that it's a huge mess up.
Yes.
They bungled. And those blacks are saying openly, it's time that the white people take over the government and govern us again. Because we cannot go on like this. Just one thing again, you can take a lot of things, but just one thing, life and death matter, murder. Remember, up until 1994, when the ANC took over, the average murder rate in the apartheid South Africa, 700 murders per year, per annum. Now, 22,000 murders per annum. So that statistic alone tells me what has happened. The violence, the death, the life and death struggle, the brutality has escalated 20 to 30 times since we have entered the new, improved Rainbow Nation, South Africa. And that's because of Marxism. That's why we are where we are today. It's yes. It's a very cruel state, a very cruel philosophy to live under, Marxism and socialism. The most cruel states I've ever encountered through history, when I read history, are socialist states. That utopian promised state that ended up in a
bloodshed.
Nightmare state. Yeah. And what I, the philosophy I developed is that I always say, where you get Marxism, you get death. Where Marxism rules, you will always have millions, lots and lots of deaths. And South Africa has proved to be no exception.
Well, and you see...
That's just murders. We haven't talked about rape, hijacks, etc., etc., etc.
The other thing is political motivation and political power. These blacks also are willing... These blacks are very power hungry, and the blacks have said that they will never make the same mistake the whites did. They will never give up their power. And you can see in their internal infighting that they are getting heated. And I even once spoke to, what was that Jew? Goodness me, the name. Sorry?
Joe Slover?
Not Joe Slover, the Ronnie Casserolls. Ronnie Casserolls.
Oh, Ronnie! Yeah.
Right. Now, Ronnie Casserolls, I managed to attend a book event that he was at, that where he was launching his third book in January 2020. Yeah. And he was talking about the ANC, and I picked up something very interesting from him. It was like he'd abandoned black politics. But, I mean, Ronnie Casserolls was with the blacks from, I don't know, the 1960s at least.
From when he was 9 years old.
Well, I don't know from how old, but he was involved with the ANC and fighting the whites and fighting apartheid from a very young age, and from when he left school and so forth. Now, Ronnie Casserolls, when I was at this thing, he was saying that there were blacks who wanted him to remain in the ANC, who wanted him to remain in the government, and he said that he's noticed that he kind of pointed out that they are so angry with each other, they almost hate each other. And it's like the environment is getting so poisonous, even among those blacks that he's been working with all his life, that even he can't take it anymore. And he's talking like they hate each other. They really hate each other. And so I don't know what his goal is, but it was very interesting that someone who's invested his entire life in this, that even he's starting to walk away from it, and he's right in the center of it. I mean, he was a government minister of intelligence, so he's been at the heart of it, and there must be lots of things that even he can't take anymore. And I do think, Marius, that South Africa could be the perfect place for the perfect storm, the perfect race conflagration that you could get in time to come. But it's not just going to be black on white. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be all kinds of weird stuff. I think
about a keg.
Remember, Jan.
I did my stint of 2 years of compulsory military service in the previous dispensation under the apartheid government.
Yeah.
I fought against these guys.
Yes.
For 2 years, I did my military stint. And even now, I was never, ever convinced that they are the good guys. Not even now.
Yes.
Because what I've seen and experienced from them under the apartheid regime and under this current regime is only worse. My opinion has only worsened, my opinion of them, because of what I've seen. Remember, we were castigated because under apartheid, I was by every left wing or libtard that I would my path would cross because of apartheid and the moral
high ground,
a low point that we are trying to defend, and these blacks they would tell you that these black people, Govan Mbeki, Thabo Mbeki, and Nelson Mandela, they are morally superior people. They know what justice is. They know what equality is. They know what fairness is. They will show us as soon as we just let go of our grip on the government, on South Africa. And voila, we've seen it now for nearly 30 years. It's murder, plunder, looting, state capture, corruption.
Yeah.
Imagine the billions and trillions of rand that has been stolen by corruption and theft in this country. It's unimaginable. Most people will commit suicide if you can really show them how much money has been misappropriated, stolen by corruption and theft. Because most of us cannot even grasp the figures I'm talking about here.
Yes.
It's mind-boggling.
Yes. Marius, returning to Harry Knussen, can you tell me about, I agree with everything you've said. Can we return to when Harry Knussen did his stuff? How many people did he really have in his organization? And what military, did he issue military orders? Did anyone do anything? And how was he caught?
Look, the police confiscated a lot of weaponry, a couple of thousands of ammunition, and plans, a blueprint.
Did they write things down?
Yeah, that at the battle plan.
Bad news.
Battle plan.
What was the battle plan, out of interest? Has it been published? Can we?
Yeah. It was. It was published. What they planned to do was to explode bombs in black areas, black townships and villages. And one huge explosion they planned, I think it was in the Eastern Cape, by blowing up a gas station or something that would have caused a very large explosion there, killing many, many black people. There was also evidence that a former member of the security forces supplied Knussen with weapons and ammunition, including AK-47s, hand grenades, and RPG-7 rocket launchers.
Wow. Any idea of the numbers? How many hand grenades? How many rocket launchers? These were RPG-7s.
RPG-7s. I don't know the numbers, but we can assume it's not large numbers.
Probably a couple, two or three.
A couple. Yeah. And then he employed people that were able to manufacture explosives for bombs. So yeah, he had that also going. And the rest he blabbered out on his Facebook page. And making threats against the government. If they don't do this and this, then they will do this and this.
Really? So he was openly threatening the government?
Openly threatening and
like what? What did he say?
He said that he has a lot of people, trained people that's trained in weapons and explosives. And you will call them into action against the government. And that's where Isaac van Sail came in, because Isaac went to see Harry Knussen, to talk sense into his head.
Isaac just...
But Harry wouldn't listen. Isaac van Sail was a general or leader. I think he's a rank of general.
Yes.
In the Boer Legion.
Yes.
He went to see Harry Knussen. He couldn't talk sense into him. And thereafter, a week or so thereafter, Isaac van Sail made a video where he specifically states that he distanced the Boer Legion and himself from Harry Knussen and his group or groups.
Yes.
They are not affiliated. He wants nothing to do with Harry and his groups and plans. And he also warned Harry that he is gliding on very thin ice with his propaganda, propagating violence and insurrection against the government of the day. And he warned him to stop it. And he even warned him that the it's not safety,
intelligence services.
Doing intelligence services is watching him. He warned him that they are watching him. And he should desist immediately from these outspoken brags and threats about what he and his people, it was apparent, we don't know the exact numbers, but it was a couple of hundred people. But he also were associated with other groups that would have added another couple of hundred. In the end, they would have been a couple of thousand. But he told him to desist not to do this, because he was being watched and he was running a risk of being arrested. And then about a month later, the police slammed down. They arrested him and a couple of other leaders in that group of the Crusaders. And the rest of the people of the Crusaders disappeared. they kept a low profile, closed their Facebook account, and just disappeared from the scene.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. Because I believe they had Telegram groups and suddenly they were gone.
They were closed down and people left the groups in a hurry. Because, of course, it's being the fear factor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now.
I'm getting back to the point I initially made, that living in a country where once your language was one of the regularly used official languages, your people are from your ethnic minority group. They were the people in government. The culture was, the prevailing culture was your culture, Afrikaner, Boerer culture. And suddenly, it's all gone. And now you live in a country that's dreadful to live in because of the murders, the far murders, rapes, car hijackings, corruption, theft on large scale, and constant fear of the violence and brutality of the country.
Yes.
And you are also being ignored. And you're also not being listened to, as if you do not exist.
All the things that they say we did to the blacks, we oppressed them, we did this, we did that, we never listened, we never gave them opportunities. They are doing all those things to us. And it's legal. It's legal. It's legal to get you fired if you are over the quota. And then they say, well, you know, when we are not, this is not reverse apartheid. What this is this is just justice because of the nasty things that you did to us. And then, of course, you've got these Malema types out there who have been telling the blacks that, well, you know, you would have been in space by now, and you would have been so advanced if it wasn't for these freaking whites who came to South Africa. You know, the whites destroyed your life, which is absolutely complete nonsense. It's just total garbage.
I wrote a piece on 6 April. Commemorating the arrival of Jan van Riebeek.
Oh, nice. Nice.
With the Dromedaris and the Reicher and what was the other one? The Good Hope. The three little ships that arrived in Cape Town.
Nice. Nice.
6 April, it was a satire. because of these things that Malema regularly spew out. I said that when they arrived there, there was nobody, but after they have climbed the first huge dune and looked down, they saw all the black tribes and Harry and the Hottentotte there holding hands and singing Kumbaya while dancing around the fire.
Yeah, like that.
Oh, Harry also had a beach bar where he served drinks and clothing, where you could buy a sample and buy the latest loincloths, spears and assegais and shields. it's a whole satire thing I've read about. Because of this absolute nonsense that is coming from the black community, about being so peaceful and so prosperous.
Oh, bullshit. Until, total bullshit.
Until Jan van Riebeek's foot touched the beach down under in Cape Town.
that's just garbage.
Absolutely bullshit. They were killing and each other and driving each other out, one another out of their living spaces. I mean, the original landowners in this country was the Khoi and the Son.
Yes, the Bushmen. The Bushmen and the Khoi.
And the Khoi, yeah.
Yeah.
They were chased away and murdered and wiped out by this black tribe migrating from Central Africa downwards to the south.
Yes.
They even discovered rock paintings from the Khoi and the Bushmen.
Yeah.
We the black people, they refer to the black people as the angry people.
Oh, wow.
Now, so it's very clear that the black tribes actually and violently, just like today,
yes,
violently attacked and wiped out the soil and stole their land.
Yes.
So what I tell a black person that is accusing me of stealing land, I tell him, but you also stole land. So as soon as you return your stolen land, we can talk about the land that I possess. You stole from the Khoi and the Son. So don't accuse me from being a thief while being a murderer, a rapist, and a thief. So just shut up, little boy.
These blacks in Southern Africa are colonizers. They've been colonizing, and yeah, they're aggressive. They are Bantu. They are Bantu. They're a race of blacks that have expanded, and they've conquered, and they've killed, and they've slaughtered. And I mean, blacks in South Africa are not blacks are not natural. You could say blacks are not natural to South Africa. They only beat us here by a short period of time. I think by 600 years or something. I think it was something.
No, not even so. Because while they were moving from the northern part of the country, the Dutch people, the Boers, were moving from the south up to the Fish River and beyond, and that's where they met each other for the first time, was right about the borders of the Fish River. And
yes,
that's where they first met each other and where they first realized, okay, there's some strangers also here on the other side of the river.
Yes, I know.
It's now history.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I know that they didn't reach the south, but I think that they only got into the north of South Africa like a few centuries before the whites came.
Yeah, yeah. And they didn't
take the whole of South Africa. Yes, agreed.
And it was not a fast-moving culture or society. Slow-moving, rural, backwards, running around in loincloths with assegais, murdering, killing, and stealing.
And coming...
Mind you, if I look at South Africa today, murdering, raping and stealing.
We're back.
Still the three most prevailing crimes of this country. So nothing has changed. Only the clothing.
The clothing and access to the internet.
Yeah,
and cars.
Murdering, the raping and the stealing is still going on like 600 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. No. Marius, about Harry Knussen's followers, I saw that his like second in charge was a white Afrikaans lady, and she'd been an estate agent. And I was very surprised because it seemed as though among his followers were people who were professional. That they were professionals. They'd even lived well. You can't even say that they were poor whites. Some of them, they clearly.
No, you're right there. Absolutely.
Tell
correct.
Me more.
Yeah. Absolutely correct. I think the main thing that attracted people in the first place was the religious cult thing. And the people that were lonesome or felt marginalized, they clamped on to this cult or religion. And the dogma that was propagated by Knudsen and the his claim to having divine messages and from God himself, being in the movement being anointed by God, visions being the very important. Pointers in the direction that God expects from us, instructed us to take back what was stolen from the white minority, marginalized minority. So there was some quite professional people and people that earned a good living that were part of this movement. And, of course, not everyone was, they were intelligent people also that was part of this. But people get hooked by the emotion of the religious part, as well as their own feelings of being lonesome or marginalized. And suddenly you have this friendly, accommodating group that appreciates you and thinks like you and even presents you with a lot of new ideas and thoughts and put you in a direction where you see some light of hope in the sky.
I'm with you.
And this is how people got involved in this matter.
How long? Okay, I think you've mentioned how long they've lasted. You say they started in 2016. Let me ask you, what caused Harry Knudsen? Let me ask it this way. Isaac van Zyl warned everybody. Isaac van Zyl made a video. He put out a video to tell people that. What exactly did he say in his video?
You mean what did Isaac van Zyl say?
Yes.
He said that, I'm now quoting from memory, but
that's fine.
But he said that he did speak to Harry Knudsen, that he could not talk him out of his chosen direction, that he could not talk sense to him. And then that he also warned him that he is under surveillance by the security forces of the government, and that he should stop or desist on the route he has chosen or taken because he's running a big risk as he is under attention and surveillance of the government. And Knudsen didn't respond well to that.
What did he say?
He called him, Isaac van Zyl, a traitor and a coward. And also said that he would not be distracted from the path that God has shown him to go on. And that he's persisting that route. And that was, as I said, nearly to the day, a month before his arrest. Apparently on the blueprints, the battle plans that they had, they would on the night of the 29 November 2019.
Yes. Yeah.
They would explode bombs made of explosive and things everywhere along close to black settlements or villages. And they will shoot and kill as many of these black people that they encounter.
Right.
And they create a complete anarchy and shock throughout South Africa. to get the ball rolling, to get to the end, what do you call it?
Yeah, to get the war on the go.
The ultimate purpose of cleaning the country from any black people, and have the white people being in charge again. It's the dreams of a delusioned madman, actually. Because the fight is not between white people and black people. It's not between skin color. It's between ideology. It's between philosophy, ideas. It's between your Marxist idea and my capitalist idea. You are white and I am maybe black, or the other way around. But that doesn't mean that I dislike you or regard you as an enemy because we have different color or race. I dislike you because you are a Marxist or a communist, a socialist, and you dislike me because I'm a capitalist. It's ideas that put people in different camps and make people into enemies and opposites, not skin color.
Well, Marius, I'm not going to go into those topics here, but okay, so
that's another 2 days.
yeah, then we're heading into hectic stuff. But I remember when you mentioned that thing of the attack in the evening. I'm not sure, was it a Friday or something? Because I also remember there was some kind of date that came up. You're right, but
yeah, 29 November.
Okay.
2019.
Now,
that night, 12 o'clock, was the deadline, the start of the whole thing.
Okay. So,
and the day before, 28, the police came down on them and arrested Knudsen and a couple of his cohorts, co-leaders, the day before, the 28th of November.
I remember that woman because I did a video about that woman because she disappeared.
I know what happened.
What happened to all those people? What happened to them, Marius? Who was arrested? Is there? Let me put it this way. Who was arrested? Who's turned state witness? Have people disappeared? And who is Harry Knudsen alone going to be the only person on trial?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Only Harry?
Look, I think the woman we're talking about is Rihanna Heymans.
Yes. That's the name. Yes. What happened to her?
Rihanna Heymans. She was one of them of the main characters.
The second in charge, I believe.
Second in charge, go-getter type of personality.
Yeah.
And then there was Eric Abrahams. Also,
now we're going to talk, yes.
And Errol Abrahams. They were brothers. And they were also arrested and incarcerated. But then...
Tell me.
They turned state witnesses.
Who? All of them?
Rihanna Heymans.
No!
Rihanna Heymans became state witness. Eric Abrahams became state witness. And Errol Abrahams became state witness. And
they
are all testifying against Knudsen. Knudsen
is alone.
He's the only one now.
Yeah,
oh, man. He's the only one. But he's got legal representation. I was also laughing when I saw that. What was his name?
What a disaster.
Yeah, look, the other guys, Abrahams, is still in jail. I don't know if Heymans is out. I think Heymans could be out on parole. They were all pleaded guilty, and they were sentenced to to 8 years prison sentence for their involvement in the Crusaders.
This is Rihanna and the two Abrahamses.
Abraham brothers. I think one of the Abraham brothers, or both of them, are still sitting out time there.
Now I want to ask a strange question for you, because there are two. There are other things I've noticed about Harry Knussen, is that Harry Knussen seems to have had some non-whites, because I noticed that his setup had a strong following in the Eastern Cape, but the Eastern Cape is very non-white. And I was wondering if these Abrahamses were coloureds. Are they white? Because those names do not sound like whites.
Errol, well, Abrahams for sure is more coloured than a traditional white. We're talking traditional here. Traditionally, Abrahams is a coloured surname.
Do we have photos of them? I've never seen photos of them.
You haven't? Let me see if I quickly can find something. Recent documents. Did that one? Three. No. Number two. Okay. I've got a photo of Harry Knussen in his pajamas as well.
Yeah, if you can send me some photos, I'll be most grateful. I've seen the one where they nabbed him in his pajamas. I haven't really got.
Yeah.
But those names sounded to me like coloureds. And have you seen photos of them?
Yeah.
Are they white?
Only the photo where they are standing in the dock. But from that photo, you cannot really make any sort of. They look like Caucasian. I'm looking at the photo right now. They look Caucasian. I can't say they look like another race or like half-breeds or whatever. But, of course, there could be, with a surname like Abrahams, there could be some wangling went on during the forefathers.
I'm with you.
The time of the forefathers, yeah. So yeah, that's not excluded, but from the photo I'm looking at, all seem Caucasian white. Yeah.
Now, how many people in total were arrested?
I don't know.
So the rest, the hundreds, and his followers were definitely in the hundreds, the high hundreds. Was it 700 something?
Yeah.
And all those whites
melted
away, disappeared. Nobody ever saw them again.
Like you would expect. They're all just they're not made of the same stuff as the Boer during the Anglo-Boer Wars. These guys melted away as soon as the axe went down. They melted away.
What about the guys, who were doing the bombs? I thought some of those were whites.
Some of them were arrested. Some of them were arrested.
What happened to them?
But I don't know what happened to them. Whether they have been sentenced yet. Perhaps they have been, and they're also serving sentences. The only guy that I could pick up that is now, or that I know of, that is not sentenced yet, is Harry Knussen himself. Because the other guys, the other people, pleaded guilty and they were sentenced chuff-chuff.
Okay.
And Knussen decided to plead not guilty, deny the charges against him. There are about 6 charges against him. One is of terrorism, under the Terrorism Act. One is of sedition. It should also be high treason. Because high treason is a crime that you can commit very easily. If you stand around the braaivleis fire, you're having a braai with your barbecue with your friends, and you are there saying that I want to disrupt this government or overthrow this government. This government must be overthrown. And you have, and you're not joking, but you have a real intention. Then you already have committed high treason.
Okay.
You don't have even to do something.
You just say it.
You're guilty. Just planning something. Yeah.
And of
course, making known your plans.
And of course, they've got documents, and so.
They got documents and plans there were arrangements on the documents, battle plan, and when was what be done and by whom. So yeah, that's deadly evidence.
You're finished, then you're fucked.
And that's a problem I have with Rick Newsom. He's going to be found guilty. I've got no doubt.
Absolutely.
Remember,
they also
have about 10 of his videos that they have played in court.
Yes.
So he's dead in the water. And then they also have those state witnesses, his previous comrades that now are testifying against him. So, I'm sorry, but he's dead in the water. He will be found guilty, and he will be sentenced. And I think his sentence is going to be something like 20 years. Could even be life. That means it's even more than 20 years. It could be 30, 35 years. He's not young. No, he's exactly my age now. He's also 63.
63
my age.
Okay.
I must tell you, I have respect for a 63-year-old man having such big plans, because I really wouldn't be doing such energetic and bold things like he's doing. He's 63 years old, yeah. If he gets a 20-year sentence,
he's finished.
Yeah, it could be more. You will be 83, 84.
He'll die in jail.
Yeah. He won't see his grandchildren. Or his children. Well, they can come and visit him at jail, probably. But he will die in jail, yeah.
One other thing that I heard, because I'd wondered, he seemed to have strange contacts. I heard that there was a black Christian minister in government, in parliament, who was somehow linked to him.
Oh, then you know more than I do. I don't know about that. Let me put it this way. I can't imagine any white person being part of this little scheme of his, for the simple reason it's anti-black, his whole philosophy and religion, or religious views, is to wipe out the Bantu, black people of South Africa. So why would a black person be involved with him?
I believe he had some kind of Christian contact, and it was a Christian in parliament, even. I'll have to go hunting around. And that's why those Abrams and the Eastern Cape bothers me, is how many of his supporters were some kind of dodgy, semi-white, etc. Because Eastern Cape is very black. Hey? Am I right?
No, very coloured.
Very coloured.
Yeah, black also, but a strong coloured community there as well.
So then maybe coloured, almost white Christians drawn to him as well.
That's possible, but I can't see the rationale, I can't see the sense in that. Because he was, the views he holds is white extremist views. So, views. People of color are not going to be comfortable. They're not going to relate to that.
I'll have to do a bit of digging later and see what else I can find.
But of course, he could have had contacts. He could have had contacts.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
In that colored or black community, not necessarily followers, but good contacts for
friends,
weaponry,
friends,
ammunition. Yeah, that is possible. That is possible.
That's what I understood, was that he knew somebody, and maybe he read more into this. Maybe he read more into his power than he thought he had more power than he really had. The threatening of the government is a whole other thing. So in terms of arrests, do you think that the state by itself had the knowledge and the sense to monitor him and to arrest him? Or do you think that things that whites did, or that whites even went to the police to tell the police what Harry's doing? Because those are also issues that feature in this Knudsen story. And I'm trying not to spell it out, but you see where I'm going.
The government has not come upon his trail by themselves on their own accord. This has been someone has being a traitor there. Someone has spilled the beans. Someone has tipped off the government. Then they started to watch him, to keep him under surveillance, probably listening into his telephone conversations and, of course, his Facebook profile and maybe even emails. But he was under surveillance after the government were tipped off. Then they started to watch his every move. And that's how they came to the got to the knowledge that they eventually had to arrest him on the day before the great deadline.
There was definitely
a tip off. Someone played the role of traitor there. Someone became a traitor. I don't know if it's. I don't think it's one of his inside circle. I think it's one. It's someone on the outside or someone further removed from him. Maybe someone with a gripe or something. But definitely there was some treachery there.
So you think that you're guessing, I assume, and I'm assuming that we don't know how long the government was watching him.
A wild guess, or maybe a calculated guess, I would say they were surveilling him for about 3 months.
Because
these things probably took time. It could even be 6 months that they were surveilling. But what I do know is that Isaac van Sail knew about this surveillance. Well, it wasn't difficult for someone with a contact somewhere in the government. Maybe someone called Isaac. Yeah, I think that is quite reasonable to assume. That's someone from government or ex-government security surveillance, special forces, contact Isaac and says, listen, man, Isaac, you and me, we know each other for a long time now. This guy, Erik Knudsen, is treading on thin ice. He should be warned because he's running a huge risk. Can you maybe talk to this guy or warn him, because things are going to go very wrong in the future, or maybe sooner than later. And that's why Isaac responded, contacting Harry, trying to get him to stop, and in the end warning him and making a video where he said that I tried, I failed, and now I disassociate me with this group and with Harry. They are running a huge risk in continuing on this route that they have chosen. And about a month later, it happened. They were arrested. By that time, the police knew about the 29 November deadline, and they arrested him and about 7 other people on the 28th of November, the day before. Yeah. And that's how they brought the whole thing down. Because after that, as we discussed, all the followers fizzled away and disappeared. Now no one... If you now say crusader, your people scatter.
That's literally true. You know what I've even been looking for? I've even been looking for those old Harry Knudsen videos, the videos that they're playing in the court. I've been looking for some of those videos because I'd love to actually put them on and let people see them. But I've asked everybody I know, and nobody has got a Harry Knudsen video. And yet those videos were doing the rounds big time. And now you can't find one, not for the life of you. Can we get one from the court?
Yeah, because it's played in the court. The videos is now being played in court. So it's part of the evidence there. We can probably get a copy. I wonder... Look, if there's a, I don't think there's a camera from the SABC or somebody there. If they had it on camera, on video, but I don't think it is. You could have just downloaded it or got it from ETV or someone. Yeah, but it's played in court. It's played in court, those videos.
The one thing I do remember is that he was attacking all the right-wing groups that are taking money from their supporters, and he was basically saying, you're all paying these people, they're doing nothing, join me because I'm going to do something, something like that. I think everyone's back to, let's rather just pay membership fees.
Knudsen's advocate, he's got an advocate, Mr. Musa.
Yes.
Mavasa.
Is it a black or an Indian?
It looks like a black to me.
Okay.
Musa Mavasa. And the two state prosecutors is Ansi Finter and Derek Rowles.
Ouch. Is it two whites? Two white state prosecutors going to whack him?
Yeah, two state prosecutors, they are also advocates.
But they're white.
And they're white, And he's advocate Musa Mavasa. I think that's black, yeah. Bantu.
So
I don't know how he's doing. How he's doing it.
Because to me, it seems like the man is totally fucked. To put it mildly, he's totally fucked, and no white attorney is even going to look at him. He's as screwed as can be. Harry is totally buggered. Yeah. Now, there were a couple of people, one or two people who came to me, and they said that they'd actually like to contribute to Harry Knudsen, to like a little legal fund for him or so. But I don't know what, if anything, he has. I have no contact no contacts for anyone, nothing. So
yeah,
it looks like he's so buggered. And another thing, if I may just interrupt, another thing is I saw that you said that he'd originally pled not guilty, but I read in the latest article that he has agreed to plead guilty.
Only on some counts.
Oh, okay.
Like the possession of illegal firearm and possession of illegal ammunition that he pleaded guilty to.
Oh, so...
But that's a black and white yes or no thing. You either have a license or you don't have it. I mean, that's... Just be silly to plead not guilty to that. So, yeah, he pleaded guilty to that counts. But for the rest, he pleaded not guilty. One last thing I yes. wanted to say, the thing that amused me and made me smile is from one of the reports, they said that that first three videos were shown in court. The judge remained stone-faced throughout the broadcasts. Yeah. It's probably a black judge, so it was... he remained stone-faced. No emotion.
Harry is so screwed. He's so screwed, man.
I'm sorry for him, but yeah, he's screwed.
But of course, the other way to say it is, you know, he made his bed, he lay in it, he didn't listen to anybody. But at the same time, people are tense, people are tired, people are chutful. And whites are going to, anyway, whites are going to get crazier. They're going to get nuts. Harry Knudsen may be a nut and maybe God spoke to him. I mean, I saw another thing about Harry Knudsen in one of the articles. There was something about him with angels in 1993, and the angels spent all the night with him. It almost sounded like the angels were up to some naughty shit, but I'm not sure if I interpreted it correctly. But
you can hear from that that
there's some crazy shit there.
That's insanity. That's a little part of insanity also present.
Yes, and there's frustration. There's insanity. There's Christianity. And then, of course, God speaks to me.
Divine messages and divine intervention.
The thing I can't understand, Marius, is why doesn't God ever speak to me? Is God got something against me? Because he seems to speak to fucking everybody except me. So I think God's...
No, they're bullshitting, man.
No, I'm just talking
God,
shit.
God doesn't work that way. So, yeah, Knudsen... lost it.
Sure.
As a bit of cuckoo-ness upstairs, bordering on insanity. The things that he that's going on in his brain is quite well scary, but also amusing. It's a combination of both. But yeah. He's not emotionally and intellectually stable.
Yeah,
there's definitely some unstableness going on there.
It's very sad, Marius. And, you know, I sit and think about courts and the things that you must see in court. And, you know, I also went to the court to listen to, I went a good couple of times to the courts to watch other trials going down and just to sit and watch trials. And honestly, some of it is funny. And some of it is so pathetic and sad, and people's lives are ruined, and it's weird crap that comes out. There's a sad side to it it's not nice. It's not nice, and
the only people that that it's maybe nice for are we solicitors, the attorneys, and the
advocates? The crazier people are, the more money you make.
Of course. Of course. Meat is meat, and a man must eat.
Yeah, shit, eh?
So the HC, the government makes another law, contentious law or rule or whatever. It's sad, it's bad, but in the end, it's bread on the table because you know what's going to come next.
Oh, well, at least you lawyers should start voting for the ANC. You should have like a white Afrikaans lawyers for the ANC. Make more laws. We need more cash.
I can put your mind at ease. They are much more work that we as lawyers can handle, especially your good lawyer or your better lawyer have so much work on his plate that we won't tender for more.
Oh, wow.
The one thing that is getting to be scarcer is paid work.
Oh, really? The economy, due to the economy?
Yeah, I regularly get people that phone me and they don't want to go to legal aid because they are so pathetic and so on. They want a senior lawyer or a good lawyer. And then when I tell them, okay, my fee is $7,500 for a day in the lower courts, $10,000 for a day in the higher courts. Oh, no. Can you do it for $2,000?
Shame.
I say, no, I make more than that just being at office and doing legal paperwork. It doesn't pay me enough. $2,000 is too little for me to go to court. I can make more than $2,000 just being at office.
Yeah.
Office work.
Well, the
but some of these advocates, juniors, they ask anything from 15 to 25,000 rand per day in court. And your senior advocates quote from 20 to 60,000 rand per day.
60,000 a day.
Yeah, and then you get every now and then someone that even goes higher than that, 80 to 100,000. It depends on the complexity of the case and the amounts involved and the importance for the client as well. So if you get senior advocate, it means that the client is loaded and or the case is complex as well. But imagine now, you've got a complex case, a client with deep pockets. Case has been set down for 10 days. Counsel is quoting his fee of, say, 60,000 per day. Times 10 is 650,000 rand just for counsel. Then haven't paid a junior counsel, haven't paid the attorney, haven't paid the expert witnesses and other expenses. That's why a big case could run into 1 million rand of 2 million rand of legal cost easily.
Wow, I'm telling
A good expert witness ask 30,000, 35,000 for a day in court because you have to wait there until he's called and then he's have to testify and present his evidence, usually a report, expert report as well. So that's another 35,000. And if he's waiting there for the whole day and not being called because the previous witness is still under cross-examination, then you have to pay him for that day and the next day when he will then be called.
Yeah.
No, it's expensive business.
I must say, after listening to those numbers, I feel like a black in Soweto. Truly.
If you're serious litigation, it's lots. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of rands. Legal expenses are crazy. It gets crazy. That's why I try to stay out of trouble myself.
yeah, I must say. And imagine you got to spend hundreds of thousands and you still lose. Oof.
But of course that happens.
Sucks.
In every case, you have a winner and a loser. That's why lawyers are always hated by either the one or the other side. Your client hates you when you lose, is disgruntled. But if you win, your opponent and his client hates you.
okay.
You can't please everyone.
So you might as well put money in your pocket. So that was my discussion with my attorney. And there are some additional points that I want to make. And I also want to just look at everything again. Because no matter what kind of a stuff up anything is that people do, there is always a lot that can be learned. One thing that I will tell you is that if people are sharp and people have clear minds and they can think carefully, you will be able to learn from virtually everything. But you mustn't expect people to throw the real data into your face. You will have to go digging for it. You will have to sit and analyze and say, what about this? What about that? And isn't this a bit strange? Etc. You can learn from everything if you are sharp enough. Even from a big disaster like this. One thing I want to comment on is that there were hundreds of people involved with Harry Knussen. I understood it to be hundreds, but if I look at some of these other things, it looks like it could have been thousands. It looks as if they may have had a couple of thousand people involved in this. But let me tell you something. In this case, it was a case of the amazing story of the disappearing whites. As many thousands of people as there were, when these arrests started going down, these groups and these whites disappeared off the phones and the internet in a flash. I've never seen whites disappear so fast. They were there the one day, and I can't tell you how fast they disappeared, but within a very short space of time, we're talking just a few days at the most, maybe even less, the whites were gone. It was just boof, and no whites anywhere. All the groups disappeared, all the stuff disappeared. It was as if there had never been any whites there at all. And it's just those four people that are being hunted by the Hawks. The disappearing act of the whites is the most incredible disappearing act I've ever come across. They were just gone, gone, gone. Later, when I was looking for Harry Knussen videos, I can't find any. If anyone anywhere does have a Harry Knussen video, then feel free to send it to me. Because I like to keep things, everything is history. But I'll tell you that I think people deleted and got rid of and wiped out stuff at a pace like you cannot believe. It is the most amazing disappearing act of white people I've ever come across. One moment there is hundreds or thousands and boof. Within a day or two, people are gone. Nobody knows anything. I wasn't on their groups, but I knew people who were on their groups. And the moment that I wanted to contact people and so forth, I began to realize everything's gone, man. They're just gone. So it is the most amazing disappearing act of whites that I've ever come across. One moment there's this organization. Within a day or two, I don't think it took longer than like a day or two, hey? Within a very short space of time, everyone's gone. Like, everyone's gone. The groups are gone. There's no proof that there was anyone there at all. I do think that whites were helping whites and people were moving fast. When they saw that the cops were coming, they were gone. I do find it interesting that out of so many people that were involved, that at the end of the day, that only four were arrested. Could there have been more that they were hunting for that they didn't find? I don't know. But I did find it interesting that only four people were actually arrested and ended up in court. And so there are some interesting questions about the method by which the state monitored them and hunted them down, and even the effectiveness of the state in that regard. Because the state has got the power to spy on all these things everywhere. So I do find it kind of interesting that at the end of the day, that in the court they used videos that were from Harry Knussen, and they've got this testimony, but to me it's like a hell of a lot of stuff just disappeared, eh? Just gone. So that does raise some questions about the effectiveness of all this high-tech spying. Because in theory, the state should have everything. They should have everything. They should be able to bring out a list and say, you know, here are 2,000 telephone numbers. These people were on this group. And I don't see anything like that anywhere in this. In the end, it's almost like some old-style foot slogging and hunting around and driving around and arresting people or getting hold of people and questioning them. There is nothing about this that actually comes out as high tech. In the court, the only things that were played in the court were the videos of Harry Knussen. So I think there are a bunch of things here to ponder, because it also reminds me of Alfred Schaefer in Germany. Because I asked Alfred Schaefer in Germany with regard to his Holocaust denial stuff and all that. I asked him about what was used in court and whether the state could come and prove this and prove that. Because, based on my computer knowledge, I would have thought the state would have this data, that companies would have certain types of logs and they'd be able to prove certain things. And it actually turned out that all the evidence that they found off his own computer, his own devices. The police had to get his computer and take it away, and they had to get his devices and take it away, and then use that as the means to prove their case. So what I'm saying is that with all this electronic spying, you would think that in this day and age that the state and the police would be able to come and arrest you, and then they just haul out all the piles and piles of data from their electronic spying, and then they don't even need to see your phone, they don't even need to see your computer, because they will have been spying on it. But in actual fact, in all these court cases all around the world, you never see that. You never see that the state comes and brings its spy data and presents its spy data in court. No, they come and they take your phone. They come and they take your computer. If anyone comes across instances where it doesn't work that way, let me know. At a point with all these court cases, I went and spent some time sitting in a court on a couple of occasions where my attorney had suggested to me that I go and sit in on other people's court cases so that I maybe learn some things by just sitting and listening. And I did that quite a few times, where I'd walk into the courts and I'd hunt around for an interesting case, and I'd go and I'd sit in a court and I'd listen. And one instance where I was sitting in a court case, a black policeman was testifying to how he got somebody's data off their phone, and he had to explain the software that he used. And as I recall, he was using some kind of software that came from Microsoft, I think. And this software could be used to go and grab something off someone's PC, or I think it was off someone's phone. That Microsoft software was used to actually pull everything off of a person's phone. Something along those lines. And I found that quite fascinating. But my point is that in all these court cases, it's not like they come to you and they say, well, we saw you logging on to the internet at this time, and we know you did this and you did that and you did that and you did that, and that they bring their spy data into the court case. No, they come and they take the stuff off your phone and your PC, and that's what they incriminate you with. So the question is, what if your phone or your PC is gone or has disappeared? What then? And I find it amazing that these whites could disappear, but I don't know how many of those whites were questioned even before or after they disappeared. Maybe there were quite a few whites who were questioned that we just don't know about. But I did find the disappearing act of the whites quite amazing. Another thing about Harry Knussen, and this comes from that audio article earlier in this video, is the number of places where Harry Knussen had public meetings. I'm not sure if they were public meetings, possibly they were just meetings that he'd arranged with various people. But I am stunned at the number of meetings that Harry Knussen had. He had meetings all over the show. He was traveling and he'd have meetings here and meetings there. He was talking to a hell of a lot of people. I am astounded by the number of people that Harry Knussen could talk to. And he's basically planning a war and planning to attack the government. And he's meeting with people here, meeting with people there. The months are going by. It sounds like he started roundabout in 2018, but it's as if he's been going on for months or maybe even for a year. And he's talking to people and meeting with people and talking about planning a war and this and that. I am stunned at how many meetings Harry Knussen could have without him being arrested or any other information coming out of it. But it does appear as if these meetings and all this activity with all these people, as if this may have triggered the state, and the state was starting to spy on them and monitor them. Even so, given that the state was monitoring them for so long, there are still things that make me wonder. There are certain things that make me think the state wasn't that effective. And these WhatsApp groups or public groups or groups where people are invited on, etc. Harry Knussen was on Twitter. Harry Knussen was on Facebook. On Facebook, they had a lot of activity and a lot of people. And that's public. I'm amazed at how much this guy could talk and the number of people he could talk to and the openness of what he was doing. And that even then, it is as if the state is quite lame. And also, that he's been doing this and going on and on and on, and then he gives the date for the attack and all that kind of stuff. And he himself doesn't seem to be worried that he's doing stuff and that he's being spied on, and that they could come and arrest him. He doesn't seem to be concerned that they're about to come and arrest him at his house. I am amazed by not only how far he got, but also that he didn't even seem to be concerned that he could be arrested. And they came and they nabbed him the day before the attack was supposed to go down. But in terms of security, if you blabber a lot and you talk to lots of people, you are asking for trouble. If you go and you blabber to this person and blabber to that person, and you are meeting here and meeting there, you are asking for trouble. You're asking for people to go and report you to the police or to the state. I am amazed that the state wasn't more onto him than it was. Now I'm going to tell you something that I know about. As I mentioned, when Harry Knussen was busy meeting with all these different people, he was meeting with leaders. And if there was one mistake he made, over and above just this meeting with so many different people in so many different places, is that he met with leaders of other groups. And I don't know this group that they mentioned called the EUV. I don't know who that is. But clearly that leader got a fright. And that leader then distanced himself and his organization from Harry Knussen. But there must have been many who felt very uncomfortable about Harry Knussen wanting to attack. But I think he made a real mistake by going to all these different leaders, thinking he could talk them into something. He was clearly looking for numbers of people, bringing in more and more people. I am amazed at the number of people that he did manage to gather. It sounds like this thing was heading into the thousands, which is actually quite a hell of an achievement. Because getting thousands of people involved and them not having arrested you yet, I think is quite astounding. But the problem with meeting with all these leaders is, what if you go and you meet a leader and that leader is not interested in your plan, but now you've alerted that leader to your plan. Now that leader can blab to his own people, he can blab to the cops. To me, his behavior had a lot of security risks. And I'm amazed that it didn't go worse than it did. But I'm going to tell you something that I know of because I saw it. I was on a group, and the leader of that group was very unhappy with Harry Knudsen. And that leader knew what Harry Knudsen was going to do. That leader openly told people on his groups that they must go to the police and they must lay charges of treason against Harry Knudsen. I saw that myself. And this was before Harry Knudsen actually did anything. This guy was blabbing to all his followers, all his many, many, many followers, and he was saying to them, they must go to the police station and lay charges of treason against Harry Knudsen. And he was doing this before, quite a time before, Harry Knudsen's attack date. Now, what I could pick up from this exercise, because I just sat as an observer, what I picked up from this exercise is that no whites went to the police station to lay charges of treason against Harry. Nobody listened to that leader. To the best of my knowledge, not a single person actually went and laid charges of treason against Harry Knudsen. And later I heard that that leader lost a lot of people from his organization. And I concluded that he possibly lost all those people because they did not like that kind of talk. That the whites rather preferred to just remain silent rather than go to the police and lay charges of treason against Harry. That same leader at some point in time, and I'm not sure if it's more or less related to this Harry Knudsen stuff, that leader at a point was kind of on the run in a neighboring state. Suddenly he's on holiday in a neighboring state. And at the time on the groups, I was picking up the vibe from various people. There's a whole lot of stuff that went back and forth. And people were wondering, where is this leader? And somebody managed to pinpoint something that he sent, which then made them realize he's in another country, he's in a neighboring state all of a sudden. And I got the impression from people that I spoke to, I got the impression that this leader of this other group was quickly on holiday in another country because there were whites who were so angry they wanted to kill him. And he was gone for about a week, quickly on holiday, all of a sudden. So out of this comes a lot of strange stuff about the behavior of the whites as a whole. That lots of the whites did not seem to go and do things to go and blab on Harry Knudsen. And that large numbers of the whites, most of the whites, kind of felt that it was improper to go to the police and to go to blab about Harry. And that all this stuff of reporting him to the cops before his attack date that this did not go down well at all and may have cost this leader a lot of losses. And that, in a nutshell, is what I picked up from the groups at the time. I just read the messages and spoke to people privately and just sat and watched a little bit day after day, and these were some of the conclusions I came to. And when it came to the actual quick arrest of Harry and all that kind of stuff, it is clear that there were leaders who had some kind of contact with the state. And the one thing I'd like to know is, how exactly was it that Harry was arrested so quickly on the day before his attack? What I have wondered is whether whites, one of the white leaders, one or more of the white leaders, went to the cops or the hawks and communicated with them directly and said, you know, this is going to happen and you need to arrest him. I have wondered whether one of the leaders, one or more of the leaders, actually was responsible for his arrest happening at that time. And to me, it's like the leaders of the groups were the weakest link in the chain, and not so much the majority of the common whites who were involved in this. That given the number of whites who were involved in this, that I don't think anything more than a small percentage of them may have actually gone to the cops at any point in time. That's the kind of impression I walk away with. That's my best guess. So the question that I've got is, if Harry had changed his modus operandi, if he'd not blabbered too much with other leaders, and if he'd had his plans more closed and within a smaller circle of people, whether he wouldn't have been able to actually make headway, and whether he could have done things and perhaps even continued for quite a long time before the state even knew that something was up. Because in many respects, I don't see anything that indicates to me that the state would easily have caught Harry and his people if they had just sailed more under the radar. I am astounded by the numbers of people that were being brought into this. Because I can tell you that if you deal with people, even if you deal with a handful of people, it is so easy for somebody to blabber a lot and for word to get out. That secrecy is not a thing that people do easily. Is there a way that Harry could have done things that somehow could have actually grown into something bigger and bigger, that it could actually have taken off? That is a question that I ask myself. I don't have an actual answer, but it is something to sit and ponder. Finally, I want to deal with this issue of attack, where Harry says that if you wait for them to attack you, it's too late. That is basically a type of military thinking, where he's saying that if you wait for the enemy to attack you, you may have left it too late and you won't be able to survive. This is actually diametrically the opposite of the conclusion that I came to many years ago when I started looking into this race war stuff. And those of you who've seen my video about whether 50 million blacks can kill 4 million whites in 2 weeks, you'll know from those details and those calculations, you'll know that I'm very confident that even if we sit and wait, we will still be able to easily survive any attempt to destroy us. But it is clearly not the conclusion that Harry came to. And that is a faulty conclusion, where he says, we need to attack first. That is similar to what Hitler did with the Soviet Union and what Napoleon did to the Russians and the Austrians, a preemptive strike. So in a war situation where you do have an army and you can launch an attack, yeah, a preemptive strike is great. A preemptive strike is great. But the problem for Harry is that Harry wants to start a war and there are other things missing. He doesn't have the authority to start a war. Harry is not an official leader of the Whites. So he wants to start a war, but he's not officially our leader. If he had been our leader officially through some process where he was our leader and he could have given orders, then yeah, then he could have done things like plan a preemptive strike and given orders to people to do it. But he's running around trying to become our leader or become a leader of sorts while also wanting to launch the attack. It's a little bit of putting the cart before the horse. He's trying to do things in the wrong sequence. Because a preemptive strike definitely has advantages. It has huge advantages, actually. But he's not our leader. He's not officially our leader. He's trying to become a leader, and now he's also not got all the people. So he's going and he's talking to other leaders who do have other people. But again, I remain amazed by things like the colored corps, the colored corps that is going to join, and other people coming in. I must tell you that this was quite an interesting effort. But once the leader goes down, once they came and they arrested Harry, notice the effect of decapitation. Notice how once the leader goes down, everything falls apart. Then people panic, and then it's every man for himself. Once the leader is gone, if the leader is removed, then the entire structure falls apart. You'll see this over and over again in history. If the leader's out and you don't have a proper structure and people don't have proper trust and proper confidence, if there are other things missing, then you just see the whole thing just fall apart. And it seems as though when it was all over and Harry was heading to court, there weren't any people around even giving him any money for legal costs. I did have people come to me and say that they wanted to contribute to Harry's legal fund. But because I couldn't contact anyone and everybody had disappeared and there's no contact person of any kind, I didn't know what to do. It wasn't many people who came to me, but it was one or two people who said they'd be willing to put some money into Harry's legal fund. And so in the end, it looks like he didn't even have a proper lawyer. And I can tell you that that does make a difference, eh? That it probably put him in a lot worse position than he would have been. And then, of course, you've got that woman who now turned state witness, and she more than anyone else could just sink him in order to save herself. So the Whites were not really prepared, but clearly lots of Whites had it in their heart. They were willing to support a guy like this. they were listening to him. And as always happens, at the end of the day, the buck stops with the leader. And so Harry Knussen took the beating, and everyone else ran for the hills. But I must tell you, I think whites are improving. I think that whites are hardening. And I think that there are quite a few signs that come out of this that indicate that you've not seen the last of whites in South Africa. I myself have been convinced for a long time that we're far from finished. And I look at things like this as merely teething issues. That this is another flop, but it's an interesting flop and it's got quite a few different things in it. I think that, as Marius explained very clearly and very excellently, that as white people feel that they no longer belong in this society and that there's no place for us in this society, that you're going to see whites are going to get harder and harder. I've been watching whites in the white right now for 20 years, and I am convinced that given enough time, the whites are going to come right. And one day the whites are going to do something that's going to work properly. But I will say as well that the Boeremag from more than 20 years ago, where about 20 guys went to jail and they were involved in court cases that lasted 11 years, the longest court cases in South African history. Now the Boeremag still holds the record for doing the best, by far. And that was a long time ago. You need to understand that common white people are not used to figuring out how to start a conflict, how to fight against a state that's organized. They're just ordinary people. But I will leave you with this. Let me tell you that given enough time, whites are gonna one day be able to stand up to the state. The will is there and the anger is growing. And as Harry said there, he never was a racist, but he became a racist. And let me tell you, that thing is coming. I know how people think, and I know how other whites are observing things with disgust. Make no mistake, one day the whites are going to surprise everybody. And it might not be that far off. It might not be too many years. It could happen in our lifetimes. I think so. I'm certain that there are going to be more Harry Knussens. Their style and their message may be different, but we are heading down that path. In the same way that the blacks have got their Malemas and Zumas and stuff, we're going to have our own versions of that until we get our act together. But we will get our act together, make no mistake. It's just a matter of time. And the way that we've been treated and lied about and vilified, and the way that they keep treading on our balls and kicking the sand in our faces, it's just a matter of time. One day this baby is going to fly. I can't say if it will be in 5 years' time or 10 years' time or 20 years' time, but in many respects I think it'll be less than 20 years, definitely. It's not going to be that long. There will be other Harry Knussens.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed. All the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid. A virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses. Frisbee sports and fancy coffee too. Energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. Thank the whites!